Hi, this is Paul. Just wanted to do a little video sort of comparing the media presence and the strategies of Tucker Carlson and Jordan Peterson. Now, in a lot of ways, Tucker Carlson and Jordan Peterson are two very different individuals and they have two very different missions. But now that Tucker seems to have landed on Twitter, and again, as I've said before, I've never watched an episode of Tucker Carlson. I don't know that much about him. I find what's happening in the media space, and I found that when I did a couple little conversations, I had that other longer conversation with a few people, sort of talking a little bit about politics and this little corner. That's sort of the angle that I'm interested in. And then, of course, when he got fired from Fox, the big question is, where will he land? And I thought, yeah, he's probably too big for Daily Wire Plus. I guess there's some other conservative TV. I don't watch news on TV. I don't have cable television. But, you know, would he land in any of those places? I sort of had the sense that, no, he's going to go independent one way or another, and he's going to do his own thing. So maybe it'll be YouTube. Maybe he'll spin off his own network to sort of compete with all these sort of little conservative upstarts, et cetera, et cetera. And he went to Twitter. And he went to Twitter. Now, I don't necessarily, you got to be a little careful with some of these things. So he did this. He obviously had the first thing at the Heritage Foundation, which may or may not have gotten him fired. And then he had this second video, which was April 26th, which I thought, again, I'd never listened to the guy. The Heritage Foundation video, I thought, okay. You know, there's no stranger to sort of conservative Christian politics and conservative religious beliefs, so whatever. And Kale really gave me a lot of information on that. We had a wonderful conversation about that. And then he shows up on May 9th. Here on Twitter, and he's back. The news is full of lies, but most of the time it's not exactly right, what you see on TV. And I watched the video, and it just seemed to be, oh, okay, you played a little, yeah, your point about truth is right. If you just watch a little bit on the news, it's not really true context and everything. You know, if you really want to dive into that, go into Jonathan Peugeot's answer, which he has to answer all the time about, well, just play a little
I
bit.
I think. And that's what makes a difference in terms of a, but I think it's important to understand that because one of the problems of wanting things to be symbolic or only mythological or only archetypal is that then you again have the same.
Okay. So Jonathan just did a video, Music and Pattern, which I've listened to a few minutes of. Nate Heil really recommended, so I'll probably listen to it. So, you know, that truth question is a difficult question, but sort of the too long didn't read it from Tucker Carlson's little video was, there are all a bunch of liars out there, and the implication is, you can trust me. And it's like, you know, most of the shortcomings you're pointing to that are inherent in the media are also inherent in your media. And very quickly, a whole bunch of commenters basically made that point on Twitter. But I thought about the fact that he is basically using Twitter as a platform, and apparently Elon Musk is, because Twitter has always been sort of marginally viable as a business. Elon Musk wants to get it profitable. Obviously, I talked about this before, Elon Musk clearly has some ideas about free speech, and so I think he had some altruistic motives in terms of whatever jumble of motives he had for buying Twitter. He wanted to sort of promote this free speech platform. And so that was also part of Tucker Carlson's video that, well, I'm on Twitter because Twitter is sort of the last bastion of free speech. And, well, probably, I think you'll probably not get kicked off Twitter too fast. You'd probably get kicked off YouTube quicker, perhaps. I don't know. So much depends on these platforms and who's running them and so on and so forth. So I just found it very interesting that Tucker Carlson picked Twitter. And quickly, the first thing I thought of is, oh, Elon Musk opened his fat wallet and offered sort of like offered a deal to Tucker Carlson in a similar way that Spotify offered a deal to Joe Rogan. And then Elon Musk put a little tweet, no, we haven't given him any money. And so he's going to probably have sort of a subscription model on Twitter, so on and so forth. One of the things that's always important to recognize is that all of these platforms are in competition with each other. Instagram is in competition with TikTok, which is in competition with YouTube Shorts, and they all have their own audiences and emphases, is in competition with Facebook. And now Twitter wants to get in the act. Originally, I got Twitter Blue before the whole Elon episode, because I could put up to 10-minute videos on Twitter, and I wanted to do that because I wanted to take clips of some things and put them on Twitter. And so, yeah, so Twitter's fine, and now you can put very long videos on Twitter, and you can stream things to Twitter, and that's cool. And now that Tucker Carlson is on Twitter because of the attention, so the video he just put out now, the original video, 24.5 million views, this other video, 25.8 million views. If he does these little 2-3 minute videos, because a bunch of the people that I follow on Twitter follow him, we'll probably get a sense of it. But, you know, yeah, this video, it's just kind of a propagandist video, I thought. And now Jordan Peterson has been with Daily Wire Plus for a while now. And I guess my thinking about that has sort of matured. I can very much understand he often says how good the Daily Wire people have been to him, and I don't think he means just financially. I think it was a terrific deal for him in that he does get to still own his own content, but Daily Wire gets the distribution. A bunch of stuff is still behind the paywall. He had said at one point that the Exodus seminar, at least the first 8, were going to start coming out in April. They have not come out on regular YouTube. So, and I've enjoyed the Exodus seminar. That's quite frankly and then his other podcast thing, some of his talks, the extended version, those are really the only things that I've watched on Daily Wire. There's not a lot else on Daily Wire that really interests me. And I got like a year promotional thing. It wasn't a special thing. It was just one thing on the website. And I signed up for a year. So you pay a year in advance, you pay a little less each month. And I put on my calendar, when the year is over, then I'm going to decide whether or not to re-up with Daily Wire Plus. I don't know if I will or not. Just again, a lot depends on what Jordan is using it for and whether he's putting enough content out there that I'm interested in. So then I thought about, okay, should Jordan have maybe done, of course he was on and off Twitter, and before Twitter was bought by Musk, what should Jordan have done if not Daily Wire Plus? Stick with YouTube? I can understand the danger of being beholden to a platform, and at least with a relationship like Daily Wire, you're not going to get yanked down, because ideologically they're sort of in alignment, but yet a lot of Jordan's stuff is sort of within the Daily Wire universe. And I've been doing a lot of thinking about the ways that our communities form us. And this happens in subtle ways. I think about how we get transformed. Some of the Pro Felicity videos that I've been doing about it sort of put me onto this thinking. A lot of the talk about the Christian Reformed Church. I do a lot of thinking about this with respect to my own journey. I found it very interesting, too, that Brett and Heather had, I thought, I know there's a lot of different ideas about Brett and Heather. I don't listen to them very much. I actually find the videos that I do watch of them very charming, because I think they're a lovely couple. They clearly love each other. They clearly have built up what seems to be a healthy, durable marriage. I think they respect each other. I like the back and forth that they have. I like their honesty. But, you know, he talked about Tucker Carlson, and he was expecting, because they're very much from the left, he was expecting, you know, it was going to go bad with Tucker Carlson, but it didn't. And so that said a lot to me. But I also know that once you're dealing with people face to face, you're no longer dealing sort of with these reputational avatars. And there's always a difference in how we deal with each other online. People notice, you know, that I think it was Matt and this great little live stream that he was doing on Grail Country with Luke and Sam and Jess. You know, I'm a troll in the comment sections, and I do when I'm in the live chat with y'all having your little live streams. I have a lot of fun just sort of trolling and having a good time in the live chat. And sometimes I get a little snippy with people, and like in a live stream at one point, somebody was making some comments. I sort of bit on him a little bit, and then he kind of said, ouch, in a way. And I said, well, come on in the live stream. Let's talk face to face. Let's do this face to face, because that's so much better the way that two people can have a relationship. Even if they have huge disagreements, it's so much better to be in person and deal with the real person. So I found it fascinating that Eric sort of really, not Eric, Brett really came to Tucker's defense, and you know, at a fair amount of cost to them in some ways. So although Brett and Heather are sort of in a weird space now, they're sort of exiles out there in internet land, as now is Tucker Carlson on Twitter, and Jordan Peterson, less of an exile, but more on Daily Wire. Now, you might have noticed I've done a little bit of few videos on this YouTube channel that I found, Echo Chamberlain, and I liked some of his videos. Some of his other videos were sort of seemed, you know, too much of a sort of a knockoff from Critical Drinker. So there are a few videos on there that I liked. But he had a video on the decline of Jordan Peterson, which was 4 months ago. And the first 15 minutes, I thought he actually did a really excellent job on this video. In the first 15 minutes, I think he nicely sets up and very much nails a lot of, in the first wave, what made Jordan so special and powerful. And then he talks about the illness, and then what's happened to him, and how he sort of has lost his step. And I thought this was really well done, so I thought I'd play it.
Profile of identity politics and political correctness, and made the left, as a broader idea, more palatable to mainstream people. As it happened, shortly after these appearances, Jordan Peterson was faced with a string of crises. After his wife Tammy was diagnosed with a rare form of kidney cancer, he was prescribed benzodiazepines to calm his anxiety, only to find himself dependent and experiencing dreadful side effects which caused an inability to stop moving, along with a sense of doom and suicidal thoughts. He was critically sick and in absolute terror, insomniac for weeks, was freezing and unable to get enough clothes on, his blood pressure so low he couldn't stand up. His return was gradual, but he found himself, in his own words, forgiven by his audience. "Here I am, this guy," he said. "I'm a clinical psychologist. I got tangled up with benzodiazepines."
Now, this guy clearly had listened to Jordan quite closely. I hadn't heard that, but I thought it was helpful.
"I'm talking to people about getting their house in order, and things collapse around me. The irony, it's almost unbearable." He approached his return with the hypothesis of including myself in the audience of reprobates to whom I'm lecturing. I don't assume that I abide by all these rules. There are...
And you know, that too, I hadn't heard that either. I thought that was really a good posture on Jordan's part.
"Targets for attainment, and hopefully that has protected me at least to some degree against the perception of undue moral superiority." In many ways, the harrowing experiences mellowed him and made him more philosophical. Harking back,
I think there are moments of that, other moments that he's going to address in a couple of seconds.
Back in one interview to the years before the varied crises and public notoriety, when his life was full of levity and playing and joking around with his children. But by now, other impulses were already setting in. He had lost his luster as a contrarian, which, to a large degree, is reliant, as a trope, on a perception of redoubtable toughness and composure.
And I thought that was really key, that there's this, you know, you sort of inhabit this trope. Now, I want to say that, you know, I I certainly don't know Jordan very well. I have met Jordan a few times, and we've had maybe a half hour, 45 minutes together off camera sometimes. And everything that Jonathan Peugeot says about him, I have seen, in my opinion, to be true. Both times that I've met him, he's been with Tammy, and they're absolutely a lovely couple. And I told them I really love it when they work together, because I think in many ways she sort of softens him. I mean, and it doesn't mean that he's, when you meet him, he's a clinical psychologist. He's very affable. He's very approachable. He's really a wonderful person to meet and spend a little bit of time with. He's very interested. He's very knowledgeable. A lot of those things come through to a degree with the interviews he does. He just sometimes gets a little excited. And I noticed that with the Riley Gaines interview today. There are a few times where, you know, you should have let her talk a little bit more. He got excited and off he goes. And we've seen that in his conversation sometimes too. But yet we're sort of dealing with the profelicity here, to use Hans Georg Mueller's term, because again, for the few thousand people, let's say, that have the opportunity to know Jordan Peterson personally, and then those who, let's say, have an ongoing relationship with him, where it'll be much higher resolution, it'll be, you know, good and bad quirks and all of that. The rest of us deal and feed in these media frames. And so, you know, for that reason, Tucker Carlson on Twitter will shape him. I had some conversations about Jordan on Twitter, and that comes up fairly regularly. One of the things I noticed, though, is some of my friends on Twitter, and not so much, no, actually some of my colleagues too. Some people who sort of complain, I was teasing Nate Heil about this. Some people who complain about Jordan Peterson on Twitter, Nate Heil can sometimes misbehave on Twitter. There is definitely something of a spirit to the platform that, if you're not really careful and disciplined, can sort of suck you in. And I won't say it possesses you. That word's just a little bit strong. But it very much influences us and brings out our worst side. And I certainly have been guilty of that at times as well. So Tucker Carlson in video on Twitter, we'll see how that goes. Let's see, how much does he tweet? Does he tweet anything besides sort of little promotional videos? And again, that's different from Jordan. Jordan is a real user of Twitter. When Jordan has not delegated his Twitter persona off to someone else. When Jordan Peterson tweets, it's Jordan Peterson tweeting, unlike Pontifex, let's say. So again, I'm interested in the way that these platforms shape us in terms of who we are, and also then the profelicity and how that impacts the relationship on the other side of it. Let's do a little bit more from this video, because again, I thought he made a number of points, you know, quite aptly.
Posure. His detractors found sufficient means to relegate him. In some quarters,
And I think that too, he worked out a really good, his detractors found sufficient means to relegate him. And that, of course, has been in some ways the, I think the biggest, when he went to Daily Wire, it really set up him being relegated to that corral. Now, personally, I frankly, does he belong there? He doesn't not fit there, but I always see more in Jordan than I don't watch anybody else there. So I watch some Andrew Klavan, and I'm going to be speaking with his son, Spencer. You know, I loved Andrew Klavan's spiritual memoir. I really enjoyed that book. A lot of what Andrew does on Daily Wire, don't particularly care for. I'm sure if I met him in person, it'd be a different story. It would be interesting. And of course, anybody who watches me knows I like unsavory individuals. In fact, I know some of you get very frustrated with me because I will dare to spend time and even give time on my channel to people who you may in fact be right, some people who probably don't deserve any platform at all, and I will talk to them. I find even unsavory people of bad faith, I find them interesting. And I kind of like watching them, and I kind of like poking at them and probing them and asking them questions, because it's like, what makes you so unsavory? Now, I know Trip Parker would say, he's always a missionary. He never stops being a missionary. And I think that's probably true. I very much get that from my father. I seldom imagine that someone is beyond hope in this life. So as long as I can give them any benefit of the doubt, I'm really going to try. But that's not at all how I see Jordan. That's not at all how I see Jordan. I wish he had more content of really exploring. I can't wait for his book coming out, because I think he's at his best when he's really from the ground up piecing together what faith and religious life looks like at this moment. That's, anybody who's watched my videos know, this is the part of his work that really interests me. Some of the culture war stuff, I'm interested in the male-female dynamic, so I'm listening to the Riley Gaines video. And, you know, even though it can get a little annoying when Jordan sort of overtalks and talks a little too much, I always value what he says, because I think the man knows a lot. And I continue to think he's one of the most important thinkers, at least in this video media space. I really do. And I know a bunch of people around me are sort of done with him and don't want to listen to him anymore and don't want to watch his videos. I'm not tired of him at all. I just wish he'd spend more attention on his quest for a spiritual home. And I don't mean, you know, getting into, well, will he go Roman Catholic or will he go Orthodox? Or, and that's not what I mean in terms of where he's going to land personally. But he's been such a good guide, I think, for so many people. And I think Peugeot articulates that well, that he's helping for people who are sort of allergic to the Cartesian natural, supernatural thing. He's fleshing out the connections in there in his weird way of having sort of one foot in modernity and one foot that is really towards post-progressive. So that's part of the reason I really like Jordan. Yet, a lot of the things, points that this person made, I thought were really had some substance to it.
He was being perceived as a bit of a spent force or an eccentric.
And of course, David Fuller said something. It's spent force. Does he have the impact he had in wave one when he really, you know, January 2018, the Kathy Newman interview, the Helen Lewis interview? The Kathy Newman interview was, it's really hard not to see that as sort of peak. His performance was just absolutely masterful there. Now, I don't think that's necessarily a lot of people imagine that C.S. Lewis was a spent force at the end of the Second World War. A lot of people imagine that, well, Screwtape Letters, yeah, but, you know, miracles didn't set the world on fire. And then he writes children's books. I'm now making a concerted effort to get through the Space Chronicles. I read them as a teenager, and I would have to say they were over my head. I just kind of read them for the story part of it. I didn't think it was a particularly great story. I was reading more science fiction then, and there were other science fiction writers that I found to be more interesting. But now getting into, again, Out of the Silent Planet, I see so much more. So it's normal for people in their careers to have highs and lows. So again, I'm still very much Team Jordan here, but yet when I listen to something like this, I think, Okay. Sort of raising the resolution and saying, okay, what's the texture of this particular wave?
He had written a follow-up to 12 Rules that, whilst containing some new ideas and no doubt personally cathartic and a salve as an academic and expressive exercise, was nonetheless seen by many as him pouring in the same litter box.
And again, I thought, yeah, I think that's right. That's why I'm really excited for his new book. I'm much more excited for his new book, frankly, than I was for either of these two books, although I was very excited for 12 Rules for Life. The other book, Pouring in the Same Litter Box. Oh, boy, there's a vivid image. I'm going to have to steal that one.
He would sign up to a content distribution deal with conservative media company The Daily Wire, further placing him outside the mainstream discourse. And
And I've talked about that. I can really see how that's a good deal for him. It afforded the Exodus seminar, which I really enjoyed. I still haven't decided if I'm going to make videos about it. I've been given some license to use a little bit of each episode, but if they come out on YouTube, I'll do more commentary on them because I think there's a lot of good stuff in them. I really enjoyed it.
emphatically cordoning off a left or center-left audience who might retain some interest in his perspectives.
And I think right there, because he's on Daily Wire Plus, just the reality is that a left and center-left audience, there he's just not going to have that much exposure. Now, again, a hit job had been done on him pretty quickly after Kathy Newman, and especially once Kathy Newman tried to do it and really rose in the ranks. But yeah, many people, if you just say Jordan Peterson on the left or center left, they just sort of dismiss.
In a novel by Allan Hollinghurst, one character laments of another. He has become more brutal, more sentimental. This is an apt phrase for Peterson, whose per
And again, in terms of his prolificity, because if you meet him one on one, there's nothing brutal about him. He's very kind, he's very attentive, and what I said about the first wave in terms of his capacity to pay attention to each individual one at a time, I've never seen anybody more capable of doing that. It was really amazing watching him work those lines in the after events.
personality seemed to maximize, with him in interviews coming across as sentimental, maudlin, lachrymose, and easily susceptible to open weeping.
To me, at the end of episode 8, at the end of episode 16, you don't lose any points in my book for that, Jordan. I remember when I was young and my mother's father was getting up in age. He had had a heart attack. He couldn't read family devotions at the end of a dinner table with us, his grandchildren and his daughter, who lived 4 hours away, and his son-in-law. He couldn't lead family devotions and pray after the meal without breaking down crying. And as a family, especially his daughters, it was sweet. And truth be told, when I see Jordan Peterson break down when he does, it's sweet. It means it shows his heart.
But with his aversion and resentment toward woke ideology and activism also maximizing to hitherto unseen levels of invective and spite.
That's true too.
Most clinching, his spite for perceived outrages and entitlement on the left led to him losing the intellectual underpinning of proportionality.
And that, I think that's something he struggles with sometimes. There are sometimes when I do see him be very proportional, but you've got to listen to, it's always been this case with Jordan, you've got to listen to enough of him to hear it. Part of it, of course, is sort of the clickbait culture on YouTube that, all these salient moments of Jordan owning this and that and that. But there are many times that he can be more proportionate. Not always on Twitter, but then again, because it's Twitter, it's hard to be proportionate.
He lambasts liberal politics in Western democracies, Canada in particular, but his criticisms of autocratic impulses and trends on the right, in America in particular, are dispassionate and nominal. His remarks on
So in other words, is he not, does he Does he hug right and punch left? You look for proportionality. And of course, you know, am I too winsome? Do I cuddle left and punch right? Probably some of you will complain I cuddle too much on both sides. Oh gosh, that's somebody in the broken clock tower Discord is going to grab that thing.
On the Capitol riot, attempts to undermine democratic institutions with baseless accusations of fraud are aloof, often with a grudging or somewhat disengaged mentioning in passing. For the most part, Peterson now dwells in a limited right-wing and libertarian ecosystem of podcasters and social media.
And I think that is the question with respect to platform. And while Daily Wire, I think, is more secure than Twitter, but I really think that probably Tucker's quite secure on Twitter. That's sort of the problem that I think a lot of the reach that he had in 2018, unless things change, he's going to struggle to recapture now.
Elon Musk let Peterson back on Twitter after he had been suspended for refusing to stop misgendering and deadnaming actor Elliot Page. Now that he has access to the social media site again, his posts sometimes negatively highlight the plight of young women in Iran and other worthy causes and issues, but are more frequently and dispiritingly close to the banal invective laced with hyperbole, demagoguery, and cheap sarcasm that can be found practically anywhere.
And again, something that can be found practically anywhere. It's sort of the beauty, and David Fuller talked about this. I mean, the beauty of Jordan Wave 1 was that first he was fresh and new, and so that you're novel then, and that's obviously an advantage, but the challenge, I think, for him is going to continue to find ways to be fresh and surprising. But now, again, it's a very difficult thing for many of you. I'm map territory, and, you know, whether I'm cuddling left or cuddling right when you think I should be punching or avoiding, you know, you've sort of got a sense of me now.
He promotes anti-vax theories, retweets climate change denialism, promotes a lecture intended to discuss the, quote, undeniable need for fossil fuels and the toxic underlying nihilism of the climate-concerned left. Describes...
And now we might be getting some of Echo Chamberlain's bias in this.
Canadian plans to make all new cars emissions-free by 2035 as utterly deluded and criminally virtue-signaling.
He does have some good one-liners, and to think about Canada going all electric... So, again, last summer, I went up to the Canadian Rockies. There's a lot of road in Canada. There's not a lot of infrastructure. I think, boy, if I wouldn't want to have an electric car in Canada. No way. My brother-in-law is from Manitoba. Just go ahead and do YouTube videos on electric cars at, you know, 20 below or something.
And exclaims, keep your damned hands off my car, Justin Trudeau. Or face the consequences. Describes the Twitter files.
Yeah, it's the or face the consequences. It's like, are you really going to give Justin Trudeau consequences? Is it an overreach?
Is truly worse than Nixon's Watergate. Describes trans youth as adolescents whose pandering, cowardly medical professionals utterly, inexcusably castrated them.
No, he's describing... the medical professionals, not the trans youth. He does care about people. And part of the reason he gets so passionate and sometimes loses some sense of proportionality is he really does care.
And labels them sanctimonious butchers. While still popular, his shrunken appeal, maximized resentments, and reactive rather than narrative framing or paradigm-shifting rhetoric has given him the feel...
And I thought that was good. More reactive, less paradigm-shifting than it was. And again, part of that is a function of novelty. When you're novel, people haven't seen you at all, you know, you are shifting paradigms. But the system, in a sense, then compensates for the novel thing in it and... Well, then you sort of have to figure out, okay, Jordan Peterson is a known commodity by more and more people. He continues to grow. And that's really when you get to questions of how is being on one side of this pro-felicity, what is this doing to me? We talk about audience capture. There's simply no avoiding the fact that Helen Lewis in this podcast on the gurus had this great phrase about internet poisoning. That really stuck in my mind. And to live in this world, you know, and even just becoming a wealthy man, I would imagine in 2015, 2016, Jordan Peterson pumped his own gas. You know, he had a little bit of visibility on Ontario Public Television, 2015, but he could walk down the street and nobody would know or care necessarily where Jordan lived. People wouldn't stop him. Now, again, as he said to Joe Rogan, most of his contact with people is positive. His life has changed dramatically, and he didn't necessarily ask for it. And I know some of you don't see it this way, but I very much see the loss of his vocations as university professor and clinical psychologist as both a personal loss to him, a loss to the field. He was a tremendous college professor. He was a tremendous clinical psychologist from everything that I've heard. And the world is poorer for him not functioning in those spaces. Now, it's, towards the end of his career, so is what he's able to do now. And so now, sort of with the other exiles, like Brett and Heather, like Tucker Carlson, what does that mean now?
...of a public figure who was largely played out. Occasionally, there will be perspectives that almost hauntingly evoke the globe-trotting figure of a few years back.
Ah, see? Every now and then you see something like, oh, there it is. There it is again.
But his claim to being a mainstream, enduring academic provocateur and contrarian has waned.
And that will be the question. What will be his vocation? What platform affords that vocation? Now, I'm sure his contract with Daily Wire is, I don't know, for how many years? Like Crowder, we don't really know. Is it 3 years? Is it 4 years? At that point, he'll have to reassess, and he'll have to ask himself, is this the best place for me? And I think it comes on both sides. Is this place forming me in terms of who I want to become? Is my profile out there in the world in alignment with what I see my calling and mission is? I think those will be really good questions for him to ask.
And there is little prospect of a third act.
You can't say that. If there's one thing about Jordan, there's something quite remarkable and sometimes miraculous about him, his story, and even his family. Again, C.S. Lewis was considered a spent force. He's writing books. He's making videos. People seem to have all kinds of ideas about what history will bring and what will be important. That Bishop of Hippo, I don't know if anybody around 410 when Rome was sacked thought Augustine was going to be a really big deal. He's still here. I'm not saying Jordan Peterson is an Augustine. The point is, we wouldn't know Augustine if we saw him. So, spent no third act? Can't say that.
We have seen the decline of Jordan Peterson.
See, and I don't necessarily think we can say that, because they go up and down. So, again, these exiles, their platforms, the shaping, what will be the enduring significance, I don't know. So I'm really curious to hear what you have to say, because especially on these on these individuals, I learn a ton from you. So leave a comment. Let me know what you think.